Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here on 1100 KFNX, Arizona's talk station, with the 50,000-watt blowtorch, a Liberty blowtorch, across the entire state. We have as a special guest Charlie Daniels from Charlie Daniels Band. He's written a book recently. It's called Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. Charlie Daniels has been entertaining our troops for years. He's like the next Bob Hope, going to go down in history. And we've had a lot of people that I've met that have, you know, been very grateful, Charlie, that you have taken the time, you and your band, to go around and entertain them and bring a little bit of home to them across the sea to make sure that they know that there's someone here in America that's thinking of them and supports them. And you're a big supporter of the military, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely, and have been for all my life, basically. I go back to the Second World War, and I remember when, you know, we were fighting on two fronts in the Pacific and in the Atlantic, and Germany, and or Europe, I should say, and over in the Pacific against Japan, and it was pretty tough times, and everybody was patriotic, and everybody was pulling for the service people, and I've been patriotic with and for the service people ever since then.
You know, there's one part in your book, you know, Ain't No Rag. We have, it's addressed a letter from a soldier, and he wrote how he was appreciative of you coming out and entertaining him and so on. And you made the comment, it is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the soldier, not the campus organizer, who has given us freedom to demonstrate. It is the soldier who salutes the flag, who serves beneath the flag, and whose coffin is draped by the flag, who allows the protester to burn the flag.
And I actually wish I had written that. That was really part of the letter that I was, and it was a lady, actually, who was, she was a helicopter pilot in Korea, and she got this letter to me when we were over there, and I got permission to print it. But that was actually part of the letter, the last part you just read, and I thought it was a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of an addendum to the personal part of the letter, but I thought you had written that. Thanks for clearing that up. But, you know, here we have someone in the military that acknowledged, you know, that the right to burn the flag. I mean, did that concern you, or do you consider...
No, not at all. I think she's just trying to... The rest of the letter, if you had noticed it, it goes... She's talking about heroes. She said, I see them every day. I see heroes. I see them in the gym. I see them at, you know, different places around the base there. And she's saying that the people who serve in the military are heroes. And she was talking about, you know, what the soldier, you know, what the soldier is, stands for, and what our fighting people stand for, and that they guarantee our liberties.
And you, well, do you consider one of those liberties the ability, the freedom to burn a flag?
I don't like burning the flag myself.
But would you make a law against it?
I don't want to see nobody burn my flag. I got one flying about 40 feet in the air in my backyard. And the first person climbs up there to burn it probably ain't going to come back down in one piece.
But now that's a, you know, that's a private property right.
That's right. But I don't think we should be, you know, able to burn the flag. I can't. I mean, it's a piece of cloth, and, you know, if somebody wants to burn it, I don't think there's any law against it, but I certainly think it's in very poor taste, and it's certainly not something that I would like to see somebody do.
Absolutely, and I can understand that. I'm just, you know, I just wanted to, you know, it was interesting, someone, you know, ain't no flag, I mean, ain't no rag, you know, freedom, family, and the American flag. Now, before we go any further, how can they get hold of your book? Let's go ahead and give you an opportunity to pump your book here.
Well, it's available in the bookstores, and it's also at our website. It's available on, of course, www.charliedaniels.com is available there. It's also available on Amazon, but it should be in the bookstores.
Well, what we want to do is we want to, you know, get a little bit into, because it's a popular book, and you are obviously a popular man that has a lot of people listening to what you have to say. Certainly in these times, I can see how the administration, you're very supportive of Bush in here, you're very supportive of the war in Iraq, you're very supportive of what America stands for and what they're doing now. So I can certainly understand how your book would be supported. Now, you know, we have here, you know, Charlie Daniels saying, you know, yeah, burning flag, bad idea, especially if it's mine. That would possibly be a lethal choice, and I can understand that. But the thing is that, you know, you didn't quite come out and say you think there should be like a flag burning amendment to prevent someone from doing so.
I would be in favor of it. I mean, I would certainly be in favor of it. But the thing about it is, if it was passed, it would be something that would be fought over by the ACLU from now till doomsday. And I don't know if they ever get it through Congress or not. I don't think Congress has got guts enough to pass it, to be honest with you about it. But, yeah, I would be in favor of an amendment that would protect the flag.
Well, thanks for clearing that up. I wanted to make sure we got to that part. The, you know, there's a lot of other parts in here that you have on, you know, social issues and so on. Like you got to drugs. You know, here in drugs you're talking about the legalization, like you feel that is starting to gain ground a little bit, and that I got the impression that concerns you, that it really is being taken seriously, that the possibility or in the future or the effort to just decriminalize drugs is on the horizon or might even be a campaign issue. Does that bother you?
Well, it's not the thing to do. It's been tried. If you want to find out how this social experiment works, go to Holland. They basically legalize drugs over there, and they got a terrible problem. It doesn't cut down on the use. It makes it more available to, you know, to young kids. It's not an answer. We can't make things go away by legalizing them. And of course, anything that would be. The government would make such a mess out of trying to get taxes on it, and all. They'd still be illegal drugs because they'd be cheaper than the legal ones. So it's not going to do any good. I think it would actually spread drug use myself.
You know, that was a good point that you made, is that if you have the government in charge of legalized drugs as opposed to just decriminalizing, you had legalized drugs, sooner or later they're going to be taxing the snot out of them so much that not only have you made them morally given the go-ahead for it, the starting pistol on drugs, but then the illegal drugs would just be cheaper. It'd be like going to buy cigarettes on the reservation.
That's exactly right. In fact, that's a very good analogy.
And, you know, the one thing that you did, I would ask you this, is your aversion to the decriminalization of drugs. See, I have to go two different definitions. When you say legalized drugs, you immediately put the government in the mix. It's like they're in charge of it. There's a department of, you know, they're going to be controlling it. I definitely would not be even think of doing that, but a decriminalizing of it, that's, you know, let's talk about that issue. By just taking it off the books, and by getting the government out of it, by, you know, you go put chemicals in your body, you know, have a nice day, but the second you start bothering me or want me to pay for something or make up for you're not being able to be productive, you know, that's where it stops. Now, when you go and you say, you know, I'm not for the decriminalization of drugs, is it, like you were saying, the Amsterdam, Holland example, it's a practical decision, you don't think it would work, but, or is it more a moral decision you would use government to, you know, bring about what you'd like? I mean, I'm wondering which side you're going on.
Well, let's just talk about the practical side. We both agree that if the government was in charge of legalized drugs, they would, look at how they tax tobacco and alcohol. The taxes would be so high on it that it would start a whole new black market thing, and we would still have the drug lords in Colombia. We would still have the smuggling. Plus, we have, you know, people who the seal of approval has been put on drug use. Let's give it a shot. Let's try it. It's also, from a moral standpoint, I think it's bad for the country, definitely. I'd say from both ways, from a practical standpoint and a moral standpoint, I'm very much against it.
So if we had someone was to demonstrate that practically it would be better off, you would still be against it on a moral basis.
I don't see how they could demonstrate that it could practically be better off.
Well, a lot of arguments are,
it's like, when we were almost had Hillary's medical thing a while back. I talked to some people, and it was supposed to be modeled on Canada. I talked to people from Canada and said, you do not want this. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare of paperwork. It's a nightmare getting medical getting medical care, and it's like anything that the government gets involved in, they want to regulate the things that they can't regulate and have no business regulating. They want to tell us how to raise our children, and yet things that they should be regulating, they don't regulate. I mean, they, you know, it's so, I'm just against the government getting involved in everything, but as I answered your question, yes, I am against it morally and practically.
Well, you know, one thing you talked about, you just said, government getting involved. Well, now we have an issue. It's a big issue. Bush has jumped on board with this. You know, it's federal financing of prescriptions for seniors. You know, this is going to be a big issue. Is this something you think the government should be doing?
You know, I have been, I'm not comping a plea on this, but this is my really busy time of the year. And all I have basically seen has been the headlines. I haven't read the fine print on anything or seen the fine print on anything the last little while. I just got in from Montana this morning, and I'm leaving this afternoon to go again. So I'm not really on top of, as I said, I realize there's a movement afoot, but I am in favor of doing something that people can get the medicines that they need. I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm certainly not in favor of the government setting up another bureaucracy to run something, but I think it could be done somehow in tax relief or something if people need help. See, my feeling is I think welfare should be reserved for people who need it. I think that anybody who is able to work, any able-bodied man who is able to work, should have to work. I mean, I and not be given welfare. I am against giving welfare to people who don't need it. Then the people who do need it, the old people who can't afford the medicine, the mother whose husband has died and left her with a bunch of children and no insurance, can get enough money to live on. If we just quit giving it to the people who don't deserve it, who don't need it, we got a terrible, terrible. Look at what's that? You want a microcosm of what happens to a welfare state? You look at California right now and the mess that they're in. You got a $38 billion deficit going out there. They're letting everybody come across the border. They're giving aid to illegal immigrants. I mean, where does it stop? It's already broke California. California is in a horrible, horrible way right now, and it's such a shame because that is a state that's got everything. They've got the tourism, they got the agriculture, they got the technology, they got everything going out there, but you cannot give everybody a place at the table and expect to be able to feed everybody. You can't do it. It is no way possible you can do it. And they've got so many illegal immigrants coming into that state right now and trying to, I don't blame anybody for wanting to come to this country, but they got to do it legally. There's no way that we should protect illegal aliens. We can't do it. And we cannot keep people coming into this country and expect this country to survive. California's going broke. That's a microcosm of what's going to happen to the rest of this country if we keep letting these politicians play up to getting people votes and keep passing out entitlements. We can't do it. It's going to break us.
Charlie, you know, you make a lot of sense. And the one thing I just heard that just piqued my interest was people that need it. And the first thing I got to ask is, who determines? What standard is used? How is it done? You know, I consider, I don't care where they're from.
Man, come on. If somebody's able-bodied, somebody who has nothing wrong with them, or why? If a lady keeps having kids after kids after kids, she needs to go to work.
Oh, Charlie, I mean, don't misunderstand me.
I went down to speak to the kids in Davidson County Detention Center in Nashville. I was appalled. I said, why in the world would somebody bring these children into the world when they were not going to take care of them? They just turn them out on the street. And one of the officers down there said, if you'll come to court one Tuesday, you'll find out. It's all a money game. It's all the more kids you have, the more money you get. But the money is not spent on the children. It's spent on the drugs and the alcohol and having a good time.
Absolutely,
that
Charlie.
That sort of thing needs to be done away with.
Absolutely.
If a woman keeps having children, if she can't do anything else but babysit, let her do that.
Absolutely.
And let the other mothers go to work.
Don't misunderstand me. I'm not for, saying that. You know, who's going to determine? Because they really might have a deep seated emotional need or some garbage like that. I'm much more hardcore.
Well,
I'm,
you can sit here and make excuses all day long for people that, you know,
I'm
that
not.
This may happen.
I'm saying if it's
happen,
not their money, they don't get it. Mine.
Welfare roles who have no business being there.
I say there shouldn't be welfare. Period. That's the point I'm trying to make.
I think there's people who need help that should get it.
Again, who makes the determination? It's my money. If they didn't earn it and they get it from me without my permission, that's called stealing.
Well, you know, we each got our ideas.
So you can see, I didn't want you to get the impression that I was going towards, oh, we need to, you know, have some kind of means-based testing and somebody get, I don't even want to have any kind of criteria. I just don't want them to get access to my money, period. So we can be easy on that. Let's go ahead and go. One thing you said here, this was good. It said, I never went to school with one black child. I never sat in a restaurant, a movie theater, or any other public facility with any black person. Black people were relegated to the back of the bus, the balcony of the movie theaters, and the other side of the restaurant, and the bathrooms and drinking fountains, which were marked colored. I went through this. I grew up in Florida. You know, I remember my father had a third bathroom, and he had a service station, and my job was to clean the bathrooms. Well, of course, the men's room is always dirty for the greasy hands of the mechanics and everything, so I would use the third bathroom. It was always clean, and I kept it nice, and one of the workers went to my father and said, you know, your son's using the colored bathroom. And he came to me, and he said, now, son, you shouldn't be using the colored bathroom, and so on. And I'm like, well, what makes them so special? How come they get the clean bathroom all the time? And it was at that point that my father looked at me as a kid, and he said, never mind. It was just, I could see it in his eyes, this whole idea of this segregation thing just really didn't flush with him. And, you know, one thing you had in here I was looking at, that you thought that, you know, minorities, that they are being denied the dream because they themselves, or organizations trying to represent them as a block of votes, are trying to give the idea that they need special rights, and that, in fact, is the trap.
I think so.
You know, we'll elaborate on that for me, Charlie.
Well, it's condescending. It's like saying, well, you're not capable. Look, there's not a race in this country that doesn't have people who are ambitious and wanting to get things done and get their education and get out and make something out of themselves. That's white. That's Hispanic, that's Asian, that's Mexican, that's black, that's everybody, and people who are not going to do anything. If you're not going to do anything, I don't care what color you are or what race you are, then, you know, you can't sit back and blame your lack of industry and your lack of getting up and going to school and getting an education on somebody else. And the society, if you're lazy, society should not have to make up for your laziness by coming up with government programs to subsidize your living. If you want to make something out of yourself, get out and go to work and do a good job. If you do a better job than anybody else, you're gonna do something with your life.
Absolutely. We're in total agreement on that.
If you sit back and say, I can't do this because white people are holding me down, or rich people are holding me down, they don't want me to do this, that, and the other, and they are leaders in those in some of these communities who want people to think that way because that's where they derive their power from.
Absolutely. And I'm of the mind that, you know, biggest one holding me down is the government. Freedom good, government bad.
Take my money away from me. You know, if you want to talk about in private, giving our money back to us and letting us do with it, St. Jude Children's Hospital, I'm on one of the boards over there.
I read your letter on that. That was a very big endorsement.
They're working on cures for stuff from sickle cell anemia to leukemia to AIDS to all kinds of stuff, and they're making headway at it. This place is supported by contributions. They will not take contributions from big drug companies because they want exclusive rights to the research that they come up with. And as soon as research is proven at St. Jude's, it's put into a database and it's disseminated to the world at large. That's free enterprise. That's the money that people donate to something to get it done. When they get a dollar at St. Jude, you get a dollar's worth of use out of it. When you put a dollar into the government, you come out at the bottom after going through to support the bureaucracy with about 28 to 30 cents. Which makes more sense? Give us our money, let us give it to people like St. Jude or whatever, or spend it on whatever we want to and make the enterprise go, or give it to the government and let them come out with 28 to 30 cents that they can spend on something.
Amen, brother. I read your letter on that, and you're talking about that. This is what Danny Thomas was supporting a great deal through
right.
his life, and you've taken that banner up, and I appreciate it because this is where one of the thousand points of light is. You know, in
Absolutely.
Private in private charities, in private effort, in private. Now, the thing is that, you know, people that donate to this are much more careful about where their money goes and what kind of benefit they believe they're getting out of it. And, you know, this is, you know, people will be presented. They'll say, look, this is what we've done. This is what we're doing. This is what we've accomplished. This is what we disseminated out to help children. This, and you might want to give us more money. Yes, I do. Well, you don't have any government bureaucracy curing a problem. You don't have a government bureaucracy saying, you know what, we can close down this department, you know, because we solved it. Well, no, that's not what they're doing. They're putting a gun to your forehead and say, we're taking your money whether you like it or not, and we're going to redistribute it, you know, for the children, of course, is their excuse. Now, the one other thing I want, we had a letter, your open letter to Hollywood, an open letter to the Hollywood bunch, and you just slammed them around for, you know, just being liberal, you know, which is suits me. But the one thing that you got in there is that their distaste or their opposition to the military in general. You know, I know what you're talking about, and I am a big supporter of a military defending our shores. I'm America having the biggest stick on the playground bothers me not. But there's one thing you said in here, the day of reckoning is coming when you will be faced with the undeniable truth that the war against Saddam Hussein is the war on terrorism. Do you still believe that?
Yes.
And what was, you know, any reasoning, or it's just a gut feeling?
The rationale behind it?
Sure.
Yeah, sure I will. Do you think he had weapons of mass destruction?
You know, I'm sure that he had at least chemical. You know, a matter of fact, I interviewed an administration spokesperson that said, "Yeah, we know. We kept the receipts."
He had weapons of mass destruction, right?
I'm sure that he had chemical weapons. We know he used them against Iran.
A nuclear program?
You know, I think he may have attempted, and let's assume that he did. But if we looked at, like, North Korea, you know, they're saying, you don't got to go look for them. They're right here.
Well,
they'll come get us.
You just made a point in my case. What you're saying basically is you were wondering if the war on Iraq had anything to do with war on terrorism, okay? Look at North Korea. People say we should contain Saddam. We've been containing North Korea for 50 years. They have developed their nuclear program. They are a loose cannon in that part of the world. I've been to Korea 3 times. They are a loose cannon in that part of the world. There's a lot of stuff that goes on over there you never hear about the press. And that Kim Il-jong is a
crazy
bad man.
He's just crazy.
They think he's got some kind of venereal disease. He does horrible things. Things we can't even talk about on the radio. But anyway, this guy, we've been containing him for 50 years. What good did it do us? What good is containing Saddam going to do? Plus the fact that the people over there were being treated like they were raised in medieval times with some king running a torture dungeon. And, you know, we destabilized him. We made a difference in that whole part of the world over there. Now, you do think terrorism comes from the Middle East, right?
I'm sure terrorism comes from everywhere where they believe that it is in their best interest.
It comes from
wherever it's in their best interest to do it.
Who ran into our trade towers?
You know, you're assuming that I know.
No, certainly you know.
You think, I tell you, most of the time, I am a patriotic individual that believes in, you know, mom, apple pie, and Chevrolet, but I just can't quite wrap my thought process around believing everything the government tells me. It's just not that way.
So you're saying that you don't think that these guys were from the Middle East that rented the trade towers?
I am saying I don't know, and just because the administration tells me so does not make it so.
Well,
but I'm open-minded.
There's no sense in me trying to explain my part of it to you because I do believe that.
No,
I believe everyone from the Middle East, and I believe, you know anything about Wahhabi Islam?
No, the thing, I know where you're going on this, is that...
Well, did answer my question, do you?
I know
you
enough
know
to...
You know what Wahhabi Islam is?
It's what I think it is. It is a belief that they should dominate the planet and that we are the bad
even,
guys.
They don't even get along with the other Islam people. This is a vicious, vicious bunch of people. It started by a guy named Muhammad Wahhabi, and he was from Saudi Arabia. and this is who our enemy is. And you know, if you don't believe that the terrorists came out of the Middle East, what about the ones that are attacking Israel? You think they're from the Middle East?
You know, I'll answer you this way so you can understand my perspective. When we had, I remember gentleman.
Don't tap, Dance. Just say yes or no. That's all I want you to do.
I'll give you a good answer. I want to make sure to explain it to you.
I'm just asking you a yes or no question.
I don't know.
On almost a daily basis, are they from the Middle East?
I don't know. This is what I know. If you have a the Oklahoma City bombing of a federal building, you have the World Trade Center, you have it, and you look at it and you say, all right, well, who benefits the
most? Well, do you believe that he was...
Who benefits?
You believe he... Who benefits?
Well, you see, you know, you look at it and you say, well, if it was militia types or something, you know, why'd they do it? Because they're tired of incursions on civil rights by the government. Well, if it was the Middle East, why'd they do it? Because they're tired of social and economic engineering from the United States. If it was the United States that did it, why would they do it? Because they want to increase their budget.
Responsible for the ills of the world. Is that right?
I'm saying that we are far better and much greater people by not interfering in other people's social and economic lives.
How are we interfering in other people's social and economic lives?
How are we not?
Well, tell me how. I asked you first.
How many military bases do we have around the world? How many wars are we involved in? How many...
Let me ask you a question now. Okay. Our trade towers got bombed, our Pentagon got run into, and our plane went down in a field in Pennsylvania. Should we have just sat back and said, okay, we'll let that go?
No, of course not. It was
we
a crime.
Have done that. Okay,
it
so
was a crime.
Is you're saying it is rightful for us to do that, right?
No, I want to ask you this.
Okay.
Letters of mark and reprisal. In our Constitution, Congress is given the ability, and it, constitutional as heck, we want this guy. Here's some money. Go for it. That was done a lot. Now, Congressman Ron Paul introduced it, said, you know, these are crimes. These people did this. People died. Go get them. And I would find that far more efficient, effective, and satisfying instead of now we're looking at a $600 billion price tag for infrastructure in Iraq. We can't pump that much oil out of the entire Middle East.
Oh, I think we can pump some oil.
$600
billion? Hey. You know, I'm not. I don't know about that. I'm not going to argue with you about that. What I'm talking about is if we don't do away with these terrorists wherever they are and wherever they happen to be, they will take this country apart piece by piece.
And I think
you will
we
not
just
be able to fly on an airplane. You will not be able to do anything at all.
And I think you and I agree, just different method. I see.
Well, I don't know if we do or not because I never really understood what you were saying. That if you don't think that the Middle East and people are responsible for, you know, for terrorism. I mean, it's. I think it's pretty well proven that they.
I say it's a crime. I say let's go after them.
Well, that's what I've been saying. What are we arguing about?
But I don't need 300,000 people to do it.
Why not? Were you going to send 15 over there and get them all killed?
You know, when you got a big giant hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I think that's what the United States is doing, going around nailing everything.
Oh gosh, come on, man! Quit blaming everything on the United States. Go live to Canada. They're not involved in this.
You know, it's a good point that you bring up, Charlie, because you know, I consider myself, you know, I'm definitely not liberal. I'm libertarian, and I believe in a strong military. I believe in I'm probably more conservative than conservatives. I believe in civil rights, individual liberties. My show is called Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. And the thing is that I do not see the benefit of having war as the health of the state. I mean, they want to do this. They need to have problems. They escalate. They use fear and warmongering. And I'm going, you know, I am for the American way. And the American way is not worrying about everyone else. If it is, then we just need to make that determination.
In other words, you're an isolationist, right?
I would think that isolationist as far as the government. Now, in free market capitalism, I say, you know, we have laws preventing companies from going doing business all over the world.
Well, see,
and I wonder why.
Backwards, because I think NAFTA is a disgrace and a disaster.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If you're going to have free trade, it should be one page. And it has big words and it says, free trade, have a nice day. You know, I don't need thousands of pages to tell me that it's free trade. That's garbage.
Well, so, we've found something to agree on anyway, Ernest.
You know, Charlie, we're running up on the end here, and I wanted to give you another opportunity to promote your book because it is entertaining. It's good reading. You have a man that is of the people, that loves his country, that supports his troops, that has an opinion, is not afraid to say it, obviously, and is a good American. And I have no problem calling you that. I think we agree on a lot of things. Just maybe... Now, empowering government to fix anything for me is just not my first inclination. I'm
well,
just not
I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to call you back sometime when I don't have any more interviews scheduled, and we can talk as much as we want to. I think we get some things hammered out here, buddy.
Yes, we would. I look forward to that, and we'll set something up, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.
Daniels, the Charlie Daniels Band, his new book, Charlie Daniels, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. Thank you, Charlie,
thank you
coming
Ernest.
On. Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.